The Dory Monson Show on Cairo Radio. This is The Big Lead.
Coming to you from the Carter Subaru Studio. Welcome. Welcome to The Big Show. Welcome in. It is a busy Monday afternoon. Lots of news flying at us from all kinds of different directions. Let's get right to The Big Lead.
The Big Lead. Top story.
I'm going to gently disagree with much of the characterization of what happened down in Tacoma with this police officer, because, I've heard our news. I've seen it in every news story, TV, newspaper, about this officer who drove into a crowd. And if you watch the entire video of what happened, there were some people street racing in Tacoma, and the police were called. And this police car rolls up. He didn't drive into a crowd. He was then surrounded by a mob that immediately started hitting his police car. And in one of the videos, somebody says, "Pull him out," meaning the cop. Now, there's a group of people where, you know, we have for the last year been hearing, you know, all cops are B words. There's a 29-year veteran of the Tacoma Police Department, this guy in his late 50s, I'm guessing the last thing he wants or needs is the turmoil that comes with a decision that he had to make. But this mob surrounds his car, immediately starts hitting the car. Somebody says, "Pull him out," and the cop accelerates and drove out of the mob of people. He didn't drive into a mob. The mob surrounded him. He drove out. Now, in doing so, he hit a couple of people. His rear tire ran over somebody who was on the ground. But here is some of the chaos down in Tacoma at the street racing event on Saturday night.
Hit those people.
All right, what we do know is the people there seem to have been of deep faith, because they were talking to their Lord quite a bit. Here is a witness who says that that police officer should be in jail.
If that was any of us that were out here that did that, we would be sitting in jail right now getting booked. So that badge should not save him.
And another witness says that she wants justice for the victims.
Throughout Tacoma.
I want justice for the people that just got injured. Squad car 2815 needs to be held accountable.
Okay, the reason I'm leading with this is because this is something all of us have to at least consider. And I hope that we are never in the situation that this cop was in. But we have to consider, because we've seen this many, many times over the last year throughout our region and throughout the country. And that is where mobs surround vehicles. And you may recall it was just heartbreaking. The mom with her little kid in the back seat, and she's calling 911, and she's terrified, and her little baby is screaming because they had been surrounded by a mob that wanted to trap them in, merely because she was trying to get to where she was going, and a crowd was blocking the road in a demonstration. But we all have to at least consider, what do we do in that situation? If somebody, because of the car you drive or the color of your skin or whatever factor the mob decides is relevant, and they decide to come after you, what do you do? Do you sit there? Do you let them pull you out of your vehicle? Do you let them destroy your vehicle? Or do you get the heck out? And I don't know what was going through this cop's head, but I do know that it is an incredibly stupid decision to, as he was honking his horn, siren going, and to stand in circle, confront, hit a police vehicle or any vehicle. That's just not wise. But more than anything, I just wanted to counterbalance how I've heard the story portrayed about a cop driving into a crowd. No, this lane of traffic was pretty free when the cop drove up to do his job and to try to stop a street racing event. The mob encircled him. The cop drove out of the mob, not into. And that is a hugely important distinction. Hugely important. So we'll follow it closely. But I'd like to know, what would you do in a situation like that? Heaven forbid any of us are in that situation. But and especially if you're a cop, when you have heard nothing but let's kill the cop rhetoric for the last year, I wouldn't blame a police officer for not wanting to be pulled from a crowd. I mean, because then if he pulls his gun, if he's being, if they smash his window, if they try to drag him out, then he's done. Then he's probably going to prison for that if he ends up having to shoot somebody. What a horrible, horrible situation we have put our men and women in law enforcement in. But he drove out of a mob. Okay, next up in the big lead.
The big lead. I told you so.
Hey, while we're talking Tacoma, let's stay in the city of destiny. Last week, five people were shot in less than 36 hours in Tacoma. And it's very interesting because Tacoma has, they've been rebuilding. You know, there was a long time where Tacoma was known for the aroma of Tacoma and, you know, the Hilltop neighborhood where there was tremendous violence. Now there's been some gentrification. They've tried to de-stinkify the aroma as much as possible. But this is something that, you know, we've been seeing. The drug addiction, the crime, that really Seattle has helped to deepen the problems of. We're seeing it metastasize, and we're seeing it throughout the region. Now, what's interesting is a year ago, let me pull up my Northwest story from November 13th, 2019. The first line in the story, I said, Tacoma has just passed one of the stupidest laws imaginable. A gun and ammo tax. Now, they passed this gun and ammo tax because they said, we got to do something about crime. We got to do something about all of the shootings that we have here. And I knew, I'm guessing you knew, that the gun and ammo tax was not going to do anything. And here we are a year later, and they have five shootings in 36 hours. I remember Brandy Cruz talked to the Tacoma mayor when they passed that stupid gun and ammo tax. And the mayor was just completely nonsensical with an analogy that nobody could understand.
What do you say to that gun owner?
I say that's like saying my car's in the driveway and I only drive it 2 days.
Oh, and I just to set it up a little better. Brandy said, why should all the law-abiding gun owners pay a tax because some other people commit crimes?
What do you say to that gun owner?
I say that's like saying my car's in the driveway and I only drive it 2 days a week and not 7 days a week, but every time I go to the gas station, I still have to pay the tax when I fill it up.
How is that comparable?
Well, it's comparable in that it's like saying I'm a responsible driver. I don't drive as much, but I still have to pay the same amount of tax as someone else because I drive on the roads. I get that they're responsible gun owners, and I appreciate that. We want more responsible gun owners. But it doesn't negate the fact that sometimes everyone has to help chip in for the problem that they cause.
For the problem that they cause. The responsible gun owners aren't causing the problem. It's gangbangers. It's people who buy the guns hot off the streets. They didn't pay the $25 per gun tax. They don't pay the 2 cents per round ammo tax. And here we are a year later in a big fat I told you so. And I said it was one of the stupidest laws imaginable on November 13th, 2019. And here we are a year later. And You have five shootings in 36 hours down in Tacoma. Tacoma Mayor Victoria Woodard today talking with Q13.
Monday night, 7:20. The first shooting out of three leaves one young man dead. 7 hours later, another shooting about 4 miles away from the first incident. Wednesday morning at about 5:30, a man is dropped off at the hospital with gunshot wounds. He dies a short while later.
None of these can be connected in any way or have been connected in any way.
In less than 36 hours, five people shot, two dead.
Okay, but the gun and ammo tax, they told us, was going to help reduce crime. But that's not happening. Taxes are not how you fight crime. Getting criminals off the street, that's how you fight crime. And by the way, I'll get to this later. Did you see all the stabbings around the region over this weekend? Oh, my goodness. Let me pull these up for you. You had on Capitol Hill last night, right where I worked, right on 15th and John for a few years when I was a kid. There was a stabbing on 15th and John on Capitol Hill last night. In Kent, a 20-year-old woman was stabbed and killed by a man on Saturday. Yesterday morning, 11:30 in the morning, a man in his 60s stabbed and critically injured outside a Linwood grocery store. We need knife control around here. I shouldn't give them any ideas. But this is the Seattle drug addiction and crime metastasizing throughout our region. All right, next up in the big lead.
The big lead. I sense a Dory rant coming on.
Okay, so what are we going to do about all of this? Well, unbelievably, the interim police chief in Seattle, Adrian Diaz, he made a huge announcement on Saturday. He said, people who destroy property during street protests will be arrested and prosecuted under a new policy. Really? So the old policy was to allow people to destroy property without arrest and without prosecution. You just watched hundreds of millions of dollars of damage in your city. And obviously Adrian Diaz wasn't the police chief when most of the worst rioting was going on. But why is this happening? Well, because Joe Biden's inauguration was last week. And they don't want the violence in America that has been so horrific over the last year. And so now, finally, they are going to crack down on people who get violent during protests. Because now that it's on Joe Biden's presidential watch, it's not a good look. We're willing to sacrifice huge swaths of Seattle. We're willing to sacrifice people's apartments and businesses because that stink was on Trump and Orange Man bad. But now that Biden's in office, all of a sudden Seattle makes an announcement that we are going to start arresting people and prosecuting people who destroy property during street protests. How ludicrous is that? That the policy was to not arrest people who destroyed property. Adrian Diaz is the interim police chief.
It's time to stop. And if not, you're going to go to jail and we will prosecute you.
It's time to stop destroying. Hey, you guys. Hey, Biden's president. Stop it now. Come on, you guys. He said that they need to be held responsible.
And the other thing that we're looking at is making sure that we review all the cases where we've made multiple arrests on the same subject, because we cannot allow people to continue to come back, you know, four or five times, you know, continuing to destroy windows and not have any level of accountability.
It's amazing the madness they enabled because they thought it would help get a president unelected. It's amazing. It's disgusting. So now finally, we're going to start arresting people and we'll prosecute them, especially if they're multiple offenders. All right. And finally, in the big lead.
The big lead. Bizarro world.
as you know, the head of Washington's employment security, Susie Levine, who presided over a so-called Nigerian ripoff of $650 million from her agency, and instead of getting fired, instead of resigning in disgrace, because she is a Democratic bundler who raised money for Obama and Pete Buttigieg and Joe Biden, she not only was not threatened in her $180,000 a year job with employment security. Oh, and by the way, unemployed people weren't able to get through to collect benefits for weeks or months at a time. So I mean, it was just an absolute failure. And she has been rewarded for that, as we told you last week. The Biden administration has hired Susie Levine for a still undetermined or unnamed position. All we know is that she's leaving, which shows that we're going to get nothing but great judgment out of this new administration. But a listener sent this to me. Susie Levine, she in 2014 gave a TED Talk. And here's how she opened her TED Talk. Now, remember, unemployment, people couldn't collect benefits for months. $650 million was stolen. Here was the beginning of Susie Levine's 2014 TED Talk when she had just started a new job.
So I'm going to be talking today about five failures in 5 minutes or perhaps even less. And I want to share with you, today's my 100th day on the job. I got here June 2nd. And so I'm very excited to be able to celebrate that with you all, especially talking about an area that is near and dear to my heart, and that is failure, which is a bit of a head scratcher in terms of why that's near and dear to my heart.
That's something you're an expert at. All right. Well, that is your big lead for today.
The big lead on Cairo Radio.
Oh, man. Okay. I got an email from a woman who was violently assaulted by a meth addict. And she says the mayor won't get back to her. The city council won't get back to her. She wanted to share her story with you and me. And so we will talk to her next, right after we check the news here on the Dory Monson Show. Seen it on so many fronts, the drug addiction, the legalized drugs, the legalized crime, and Seattle City Council wants to make it even worse. And what's going to happen is crime will deepen. And we're seeing that Seattle is one of the worst cities. And it spreads. I mean, it's metastasizing. Stabbings all around the region yesterday, you know, throughout King and Snohomish counties, and it's spreading throughout the entire region. I want to share with you an email I got from a listener named Christine. She said, I was assaulted and seriously injured by a meth addict during a break-in at my condo building in Greenwood. I've tried and tried, but failed to get a response from Mayor Durkin or any of the Seattle City Council members regarding the incredible and absolutely unforgivable amount of crime and drug addiction in this city as they continue to just allow the criminals to take over and flourish. And Christine joins us here on the Dory Monson Show. Christine, thanks for coming on with me today.
Thank you so much, Dory.
Yeah, I appreciate you reaching out because I do think it's important to get these stories out there. And, you know, to whatever extent you are comfortable, share with me what happened to you.
Sure. So this event happened 10 days before Christmas last year. And what happened was my partner and I were woken up at about 12:45 a.m., by one of my dogs, actually, who was going crazy, which is pretty out of character. And so we bolted out of bed, and outside my dining room window, you can see the back door of my building. And my partner, Todd, looked out and saw just tons of stuff just being stockpiled out there. So it was pretty obvious that we were being robbed at the time. So he went to investigate, and he actually found someone in the building and chased them out of the building. And ran for chased this person for several blocks until a car pulled around and picked that person up and drove away. So meanwhile, I unfortunately thought that that was it. And there was no one else in the building. So I started walking around to assess the damage. You know, our mail was all over the place. Packages had been stolen. There was things strewn about the building from our storage lockers.
Okay.
Each unit has a storage locker on each floor.
Yep.
So as I went, and it's a three-story building, so as I was walking around, I went up to the third floor to see what was going on there. And when I opened the door to the large room that houses all the storage lockers, there was someone in there still. Mm. So
what goes through your mind? Because you weren't expecting somebody on the other side of that door. So what goes through your mind right then?
Well, I've thought about this quite a bit, actually, because a lot of people thought, oh, you must have been so scared. And I think initially I was, but then I was just overcome by anger, actually, because this was actually a third break-in just within a six-month period.
Mm-hmm.
And I am regularly picking up needles in our carports. There's prostitution going on in our parking spots. And since I'm working from home quite a bit now during the pandemic, I mean,
sure,
these things are going on all day and all night. It's not even just the middle of the night. So when I saw someone in there, my first reaction was just such anger. So I asked this woman to leave, and she started yelling at me. And what made me even more upset was that she kept saying over and over how there was nothing I could do about it, that even if she were to be arrested, which she felt like she wouldn't be, that she would just be let go, and it was no problem, that she could do whatever she wanted.
No, that's absolutely
true. I really believe that's true.
Yeah, it's absolutely true.
Absolutely true.
Yeah, the word is out. The cops' hands are tied, not by their choice. You know, their police chief this weekend said they're going to start getting a little tougher now. But Seattle City Attorney, they're just going to keep kicking people loose for property crimes. So you said you were assaulted and seriously injured. What happened?
Right. Right. So what happened was we kind of got in an argument, and I kind of chased her down the stairs. So down three flights of stairs, and she went out the back of the building. And like I said earlier, there was all of the belongings to different residents here out the back door. So when we got to the bottom, there must have been the suitcase. It was outside the door. It was this very hard plastic roller type suitcase. Mm-hmm. And as she was about to leave the building, she grabbed it, picked it up, and threw it at me. And it hit me right between the eyes. So I had to get 13 stitches. There's a huge laceration from above my eyebrow down over the bridge of my nose and down to the corner of my eye. Mm-hmm. I'm actually pretty lucky, because if it was even a little bit further over, it could have literally taken my eye completely out.
Oh, yeah.
Well,
and I got to ask, Christine, and I am mm-hmm. not about blaming the victim, but you said you've heard a lot of comments from a lot of people. Have you rethought the wisdom of chasing somebody who is likely a drug addict over property?
You know, I wrestle with that, because I just feel like I can't be scared. I can't live in fear of someone continually breaking in and violating my home, and
yeah,
just let it go and just let them do it. And because I don't care about any of the things that were stolen. I mean, nothing of mine was even stolen, and I don't really care about that. It's just the principle of it. I feel very strongly that I cannot allow people to just come in here with no consequences and like no reaction from the residents of the city or the residents of this building. So maybe that was just stupid of me, because obviously I got hurt.
I ask that as a devil's advocate, and not because I also think we have to start standing up, because you know, the police cannot get to all of these crimes because there are so many of them. Let me go to the other side of the spectrum. Have you thought about getting a gun?
You know, I never really had before until now, because I mean, like I said, this building has been broken into multiple times, and I have called the police and they won't come. They won't come unless you're hurt. They did come that night after I called them because I was injured. And I've called them about other things going on in the neighborhood. We have several homes that are being squatted in by other addicts, and you see right out your window, you see crime happening. And I've called about these particular things that I've witnessed, and nobody comes unless you're in physical danger, and by then it's too late. So I feel like almost you have no choice but to protect yourself. And I feel like the residents of the city are so passive as well, and I just won't let that happen. Yeah. And, you know, I've lived in like most major U.S. cities, grew up in the New York area. I lived in Chicago for a long time before moving here. And these are known violent cities, but I have never felt unsafe until I lived here. And it's because there's no police presence around.
That is a strong and then finally, I only have a few seconds left, but the other thing that struck me, you contacted the mayor, you contacted the Seattle City Council, including your representative. They don't even respond to you. Is that right?
That's right. I did not hear anything back from any of the council members. And I've actually emailed them a couple of times. After about 3 weeks, I did hear back from the mayor's office, but it would have been less insulting if I didn't hear back at all, because from the response, it was so obvious that she hadn't even read the letter that I sent or looked at any of the photos of my injuries that I sent, because it was basically just blaming everything on COVID, which we all know is that's not true. Because I think there's 360 unauthorized homeless camps counted before COVID even hit. So it's not like these crazy things have not been going on, and they just started happening this past year.
That's insane to blame that. Well, I'm sorry this happened. I'm glad you reached out to me because, as I said, I think we need to get these stories out there, because people have to understand that it's going to take all of us with our votes and with our action to try to get some sanity back to the city that I love. And when you say you grew up in New York, you lived a long time in Chicago, but you've never felt scared until you came to Seattle, that was a pretty shocking thing to hear.
Yeah, it's unfortunate, because I think this is a beautiful place, and it's sad to see how it's being destroyed.
Yeah, I agree. Well, Christine, all my best to you, and
thank you so much.
Keep me posted on any developments on the story, okay?
I sure will. Thanks.
Okay. All right. Christine, bye-bye. Seattle resident who was badly injured by a meth addict, robbing her condo building. This is Seattle in 2021 here. Your thoughts, text me at 98973. That's 98973. And we do have lots more straight ahead here on the Dory Monson Show. During the spot break, I talked to a police source about our lead story, the cop that drove out of an attacking crowd down in Tacoma. The back window of his vehicle had been broken out. Dents had been kicked in the police car, and they were shouting to get him, meaning the police officer. As he drove through the crowd, as he was fleeing from the mob, he did run over one guy who has a broken ankle. But I'm getting a lot of feedback from you on this. And a couple people said, why didn't he back up? I asked that question because I appreciated it. He had started to back up, and you see in one of the videos that he briefly is backing up, but he realized that he didn't have the kind of vision backing up as he would going forward. And he thought, well, I'll probably run over somebody, because they'd encircled his car by that point. So that's the update. I want to tell you, there was one comment from the lady I just talked to, Christine, who was attacked in her condo building. She said something toward the end of that interview that I found remarkable. And Nicole just pulled the clip for us here, but I want you to think about this, because As I've said a billion times, I was born in Seattle, raised my family in the city and just outside of the city, but have stayed in the region because I still think this is a place, you know, this entire region. I still think it's a place worth fighting for, but it's pretty amazing when somebody who's a violent crime victim, like Christine, who I just talked to, says something like this.
I live in like most major U.S. cities, grew up in the New York area. I lived in Chicago for a long time before moving here. And these are known violent cities, but I have never felt unsafe until I lived here. And it's because there's no police presence.
Now, I'm struck by that on so many levels. Now, first of all, I have never felt unsafe in New York City, but I haven't been to New York City in the last year. I've walked all around New York City in the weeest hours of the morning, and I've never felt unsafe. But again, this year it's gotten bad, and especially in upper East Side and the Upper West Side of Manhattan, the street crime has gotten horrific because you have a Marxist, Bill de Blasio, in charge. We have Marxists in charge here in Seattle as well. And so crime happens when you have people in charge who are encouraging it with their policies. In Chicago, I haven't walked all around Chicago. I've been mostly in, you know, the Magnificent Mile area and, you know, the center part of the city. It's always been fine. It still is today. You know, it's only when you get into the South Side, the most dangerous parts of the city where gangs literally rule the streets, then you feel unsafe. But in Seattle, especially when I worked at the TV station till 11:30. I had friends, and we would just walk around downtown till 2 or 3 in the morning. Never felt unsafe for a second. I used to ride my bike to the Seattle Center at midnight when I was 12 years old. Never felt unsafe. But look at it now. Some of the worst in the country. It's the people we put in charge. Fastest 15 is coming up next.